I know, that's where I'm at.
Okay, we're going to get started, everyone. If we can simmer down. I'm Amorous. I'm a compulsive eater. And I'm so excited to be with you all today. And I just feel like I'm going to burst. It's excitement, not nerves. But today we're going to be reading the doctor's opinion. And if you don't have a sheet, so if you need a sheet, they're at the front. I'd suggest taking notes on these as we read because there are not a lot of copies of the doctor's opinion to read. So to start, I suppose we'll say the Serenity Prayer. All right. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will not mind be done.
I'm Amy. I'm a compulsive eater.
Hi.
The doctor's opinion. We of Alcoholics Anonymous, or Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, how, believe that the reader will be interested in the medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in this book. Convincing testimony must surely come from medical men who have had experience with the sufferings of our members and have witnessed our return to health. A well-known doctor, chief physician at a nationally prominent hospital specializing in alcoholic and drug addiction, gave Alcoholics Anonymous this letter. To whom it may concern, I have specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years. In late 1934, I attended a patient who, though he had been a competent businessman of good earning capacity, was an alcoholic of a type I had come to regard as hopeless. In the course of his third treatment, he acquired certain ideas concerning a possible means of recovery. As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics, impressing upon them that they must do likewise with still others. This has become the basis of a rapidly growing fellowship of these men and their families. This man and over 100 others appear to have recovered. I personally know scores of cases who were of the type with whom other methods had failed completely. These facts appear to be of extreme medical importance because of the extraordinary possibilities of rapid growth inherent in this group. They may mark a new epoch in the annals of alcoholism. These men may well have a remedy for thousands of such situations. You may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves. Very truly yours, William D. Silkworth, M.D.
Leah, compulsive eater. The physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms what we who have suffered alcoholic torture must believe, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life, that we were in full flight from reality, or we were outright mental defectives. These things were true to some extent, in fact, to a considerable extent with some of us, but we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Although we work out our solution on a spiritual as well as an altruistic plane, we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who is very jittery or befogged. More often than not, it is imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he is approached, as he has then a better chance of understanding and accepting what we have to offer, the doctor writes.
Hi, everyone. Nina, compulsive eater.
The subject presented in this book seems to me to be of a paramount importance to those afflicted with alcoholic addiction. I say this after many years' experience as medical director of one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. There was, therefore, a sense of real satisfaction when I was asked to contribute a few words on a subject which is covered in such masterly detail in these pages. We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of moral psychology was of urgent importance to alcoholics, but its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside our synthetic knowledge. Many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book came under our care in this hospital. And while here, he acquired some ideas which he put into practical application at once. Later, he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell his story to other patients here, and with some misgiving, we consented. The cases we have followed through have been most interesting. In fact, many of them are amazing. The unselfishness of these men, as we have come to know them, the entire absence of profit motive, and their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one who has labored long and wearily in this alcoholic field. They believe in themselves and still more in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. Of course, an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor, and this often requires a definite hospital procedure before psychological measures can be of maximum benefit.
Share, compulsive eater.
We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, is that okay? That the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all, and once having formed the habit and found that they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. If any feel that, as psychiatrists directing a hospital for alcoholics, we appear somewhat sentimental, let them stand with us a while in the firing line, see the tragedies, the despairing wives, the little children. Let the solving of these problems become a part of their daily work and even their sleeping moments. And the most cynical will not wonder that we have accepted and encouraged this movement. We feel, after many years of experience, that we have found nothing which has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the altruistic movement now growing among them. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once from having a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity after they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of esprit, emerging remorseful from a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
On the other hand, this, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary is that to follow a few simple rules. Men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal, "Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. You must help me." Faced with this problem, if a doctor is honest with himself, he must sometimes feel his own inadequacy. Although he gives all that is in him, often it is not enough. One feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the essential psychic change. Though the aggregate of recoveries resulting from psychiatric effort is considerable, we physicians must admit we have made little impression upon the problem as a whole. Many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I've had many men who had, for example, worked for a period of months on some problem or business deal, which was to be settled on a certain date, favorable to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date. Then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all others' interests, important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. The classification of alcoholics seems most difficult and in much detail outside the scope of this book. There are, of course, the psychopaths who are emotionally unstable. We are all familiar with this type. They are always going on the wagon for keeps. They are over remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision. There is the type of man who is unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking. He changes his brand or his environment. There is the type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger. There is the manic depressive type, who is perhaps the least understood by his friends and about whom whole chapters could be written.
Then there are types entirely normal in every respect, except in the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. This immediately precipitates us into a seething cauldron of debate. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians, the general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. What is the solution? Perhaps I can best answer this by relating one of my experiences. About 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for chronic alcoholism. He had but partially recovered from a gastric hemorrhage and seemed to be a case of pathological mental deterioration. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living, one might say, to drink. He frankly admitted and believed that for him, there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was found to be no permanent brain injury. He accepted the plan outlined in this book. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and contentment. I talked with him for some time, but was not able to bring myself to feel that I'd known him before. To me, he was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time had passed with no return to alcohol. Who is number?
When I need a mental uplift, I often think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. The patient had made his own diagnosis and, deciding his situation hopeless, had hidden in a deserted barn, determined to die. He was rescued by a searching party in a desperate condition brought to me. Following his physical rehabilitation, he had a talk with me in which he frankly stated he thought the treatment a waste of effort. Unless I could ensure him, which no one ever had, that in the future he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. His alcoholic problem was so complex and his depression so great that we felt his only hope would be through what we then called moral psychology, and we doubted even that would have any effect.
However, he did become sold on the idea contained in this book. He has not had a drink for a great many years. I see him now and then, and he is as fine a specimen of manhood as one could wish to meet. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through, and though perhaps he came to scoff, he may remain to pray. William D. Silkworth, M.D.
All right. Thank you to everyone who read. And does anyone not have the copy of the worksheet? Okay, so I'll go find you. But for the next 10 minutes, we're going to be filling out the questions. Okay, so I'm going to set an alarm.
So how does the doctor see that alcoholics are powerful? All the different... Powerless. Are powerless. Okay. All right. All the different people from different walks of life are personalities can't control or stop their eating of sugar or sugar products or white starchy products when they take the first bite. Then they have a physical allergy which prevents them from being able to stop, and that's the phenomenon of craving. So that's what I wrote on that.
Thank you.
I'll sue you first.
Do we have anyone else that wants to share on the first one?
Come on in.
And when you're done, if you could just sign this, because you're being reported. I'm being recruited, by the way.
Hi, I'm Jerry, compulsive eater from Seattle.
Hey, Jerry.
And let's see. So how does the doctor see that alcoholics are powerless? And I wrote, alcoholics and compulsive eaters are powerless over the compulsion to eat. We are forever trying to fill the void in our lives that only a higher power can fill. Higher power can remove the compulsion to eat and allow us to heal our pain and suffering.
No, that's Mrs. Please. All right. And we could go on to the second question. Or I could share a little bit on what I wrote too, since this, I'm like, am I sharing much in this workshop? But I basically wrote Amorous Compulsive Eater for those listening. I basically wrote that the doctor sees compulsive eating as an allergy outside of our control that is permanent. And the only solution is complete abstention from sugar and flour. And I wrote, the doctor describes it as a disease and not a character issue. All right. So let's see. Question two. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. How are you powerless?
Julianne, compulsive eater and bulimic. I wrote, I have an allergy to certain foods that are once eaten, I cannot stop, even with abstinent food. Not as severe, but I must commit and measure my food. Because, I mean, I have an allergy to all food in a way. So that's what I wrote.
She saw me later. She's hanging on.
I'm Leah, compulsive eater.
Yeah.
Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. For me, one bite triggers an avalanche. No amount of food can quell of sugar and flour or quantity. I cannot control taking the first bite. It always wins. There is just one. That's my thinking. Although my deception tells me I can have just one. All rationality stops until I either succumb, causing the avalanche of food and behaviors, or take action, take positive action, and change a thought.
Right.
Thanks, Leah. Do we have anyone else who wanted to share on the second question? All right. And for the third one, step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What is the spiritual solution that the doctor talks about? Who would like to share?
Hi, I'm Marty. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Marty.
And I think in order for me to... I had to figure out what the problem was before I can get into the solution. And I think for me, it's just been a slow process. And, you know, the problem for me is that I have this disease. And that was to accept that was, that's part of what the surrender is like for me every day. So the solution is the program. The spiritual solution is the tools of the program. It's prayer and meditation. It's calling you guys when I don't know. You know, it's calling you guys when I need support, when I don't know what to do, when I can't identify a feeling, or when I'm afraid to identify a feeling. And then ultimately it's, you know, surrendering to a power greater than myself. And you know what, you guys, sometimes I don't even know what that is. You know, sometimes I, you know, without knowing what the solution is, it's like I just say, you know what, I don't know. You know, and just surrendering to the next right action or the next indicated thing. Or, you know, right now I'm in a huge life transition in so many different areas of my life. But what I do know is that the power, you know, eating isn't going to change or solve any of this. So the solution for me is in the problem. And that has been my experience. It's like I have to remind myself every day that, you know, the solution is in the problem. Is as long as I'm willing to accept that I'm powerless and that my life's unmanageable, at some point, the power is able to shine through. I don't know if any of that makes sense, but that's kind of, you know, for me, it's like the willingness to be power. You know, it's like surrender my will, and then God's able to show me what I need to do next. Thank you.
Nice word.
Well, awkwardly, I guess.
Nice, Larissa, compulsive eater. So, and what is the spiritual solution that the doctor talks about? I think the spiritual solution is mental, an entire psychic change. And that's what I think I have to have, and that's what I think I have to have on a daily basis. Thanks.
All right, we have a few minutes left. Is there anyone else that would like to share on what they wrote or on the reading?
Hi, I'm Marcia.
Whoop.
I'm Marcia.
And I think part of the spiritual solution is hearing from other people what they've gone through and watching that they've come out the other side. Because without the experience of someone else and seeing it with your own eyes, basically nobody but Bill did it without that. Everybody else had an example of someone who had gone through that psychic change. And it changes people. They look different. We feel different. Oh, and then it requires that we share that with other people so that it gets passed on. And without us passing it on and sharing it with other people, then we can lose what we have because it's part of that circle. Thank you.
Me.
Well, we're pretty close to end time, so this is when I like to say, if you have a burning desire to share, you could come up and share. There's anyone in the room? Thanks, Amaris. I'm Maggie. I'm a compulsive eater. Hi. My favorite part of the doctor's opinion is frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And I have some personal experience with that, trying to give frothy emotional appeal to people that I know and love, and it doesn't work. And I've had a lot of experience with that, but I've also had my own with my own, you know, parents, family, well-intentioned friends that tried to do that. But if you only lost a little weight, or if you only showed up for commitments, or, you know, one time I went to visit my mom and I hadn't seen her in several months, and I walked past her and I could see her wiping tears because I'd gained so much weight since the last time she had seen me. And that was frothy emotional appeal. I'm sure that she thought that if my daughter sees that, I mean, that's not why she was crying, but I'm sure she thought if she sees me crying, she'll stop. And instead I was just like, it doesn't work. But what does work is continued, for me, my experience, continued abstinence, continuing to stay here, and eventually the seeds are planted and they call us one night or one morning and say,
Okay, I'm willing. Thanks. All right, we are at the end of our time. So thank you, everyone. I was so excited to be here with you all and do my first workshop with at the convention, which was, like, so exciting. But if we could just take a moment and say the serenity prayer as a group, because I'm on Zoom a lot and I want to soak up having your voices here with me. All right. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Keep coming back.
Works if you wait that.
Ceremony should end teal. Is teal or triple?
I was like, TLT.